You are listening to BensTorah.com.
Someone raised the possibility that we should make this year a Shana Mu'baris and push off Pesach for a month, on the assumption that in a month, it's another 2 weeks to Pesach. In other words, in another month and 2 weeks, the whole Shas HaTchak will be over. There is a famous dispute between the Rambam and the Ramban. How did Rosh HaChadoshim take effect? The din is that you have to have a bezin of three. According to the Rambam, the bezin of three should be authorized by the bezin HaGadol. You have to have a bezin of three declaring that today is Rosh Chodesh. You have to have a bezin declare that it should be a Shana Mu'baris. So today, nobody has any smicha. There's no bezin. How do Rosh HaChadoshim happen? And how do Shana Mu'baris take effect? So the Ramban's opinion is that Hillel Hasheni, that Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya was who was the grandson of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, the one who edited the Mishnayos. So Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya and Hillel Hasheni were Mekadosh Ole Rosh HaChadoshim until Bi'asah Goel, and he declared Dor Doshana Mu'baris. It's not that we don't do anything today. We just announced Mamish Chodesh is going to be, but it was all established by Hillel Hasheni and Rabbi Yehuda Nasiya. Even according to the Rambam, who claims that there's a halacha Moshe Mitzrayim, the Ramban makes fun of the Rambam. Ramban writes, I'm a little familiar with Talmud, and I never heard of this halacha Moshe Mitzrayim. What do they keep it a secret from me? So the Rambam claims that there is a halacha Moshe Mitzrayim, that Bizman, that there's no Sanhedrin, so the Rosh HaChadoshim happen on their own, according to the Alpi HaChesben. So the simple reading on the Rambam is it happens by itself based on the Cheshbon. The Cheshbon was also established by Hillel Hasheni. We can't change that Cheshbon. Soloveitchik interpreted the Rambam based on a couple of lines in the Rambam here and there. It's not that the Rosh HaChadoshim happened by themselves, that Klal Yisrael makes it into Rosh HaChadoshim. Yeah, but we're going to make this year a Shana Mu'baris. Then we're going to confuse the whole system. I don't think it's going to help too much. I'm afraid that even if we postpone Pesach for another month, we're still going to have a big problem. So I don't think that's a good recommendation. Someone wanted to know, is it permissible to eat kidneys if you don't have enough food to eat on Pesach? Traditionally in Europe, whenever there would be a Shnas Batzores, there wasn't enough food to eat. So the Rabbanim always used to gather together and be mata kidneys that year. What is that based on? So the Pashtas is like the Dogel Mervava writes. Nodi Behuda has a commentary on the margin of the Shulchan Aruch that's called Dogel Mervava. So he in the third Chelek Yeridaya, it begins with Hilchas Shvuas and Hilchas Nedarim. So it says there's a whole simon based on the Ran and Nedarim, quotes a pshat from Bali Atosis, that all the Gemara, interpreting the Gemara, that if you have a minik toiv is binding mitam neder mid the rabbanon. Minatora neder is only binding, like it says in today's Sedra, nefesh kisi shava levate besasayim. You have to pronounce it with your lips. Even goma beliboy, even if you made up your mind, behechlitzoch lehoitzi besvasov. You have to say the neder and the shvua with your lips. So we assume it's both by neder and shvua. But mid the rabbanon, they made a din that a minik toiv is binding me tam neder. Minik toiv means if I did it three times in a row, or if I did it once and I intended to continue to do it for the rest of my life, and then it's binding me tam neder. Then we assume there are two types of shvuas. There's a shvuas hayochid and a shvuas hatzibur. The Ragat Shavah points this out, that the Pasuk says in Shir HaShirim, the Pasuk that appears three times, Nishbati eschem enosu yushalayim im te'iru im te'iru esohava, the Shalosh Shavuos that the Gemara in the end of Ksubas talks about. So I never took the Shavua. My grandparents never told me that they took the Shavua. Nobody remembers ever taking that Shavua. Shlomo HaMelech wrote in Shir HaShirim, apparently that Klal Yisrael took the Shavua a long time ago. So why is the Shavua binding on us? So apparently there's such a concept as Shavuos HaTzibur. Whoever is a member of that Tzibur is bound by the Shavuos HaTzibur. So neder is binding, minig toiv is binding mitam neder. So if a yochid accepts upon himself a minig toiv, a person starts learning daf yomi every day, 3 days in a row. So he learns it one day and he plans to continue the rest of his life to learn daf yomi. So then it becomes binding mitam neder. Or if a tzibur accepts upon himself minig toiv, so minig toiv is binding mitam neder as if it were a shvuas tzibur. So whenever this whole din is midrabbanan, so this din that a minig toiv is binding, this is Tosfos shita. The Rambam has a totally different shita, but the Shulchan Aruch in the beginning of third chelik yoredei has accepted the shita's bali Tosfos that minig toiv is binding mitam neder. So if a person wants to discontinue observing the minig toiv, so the Shulchan Aruch says that he has to have hatoros nedar, he has to gather together bezna three, and he has to be matan neder. So the Dogam of Abba says, this is only if from now on he no longer plans to observe this Midas Chasidus. He doesn't want to observe it anymore. But if he plans to continue with his minig toiv, just 1 year he gets stuck, like there's a minig by Ashkenazim not to eat kidneys. Once in a long while you get stuck, there's a Shnas Batzoris, so it's too difficult to observe the minig toiv. So then we're mata the kidneys. You don't really need Hatoros Nedarim. The Dogam of Abba says, if it's self-understood that if you have a Midas Chasidus, that which Mikra Din is not required, and it comes a Shas HaTrax, it's self-understood that once in a while, when it'll be too difficult to observe, one is not going to observe the Midas Chasidus. So that's the story with the kidneys. Usually the Rabbanim used to decide, you're not going to leave it up to every Tom, Dick, and Harry to decide on his own whether he thinks that it's enough of a Shas HaTrax to be mate kitnias. So the Rabbanim used to gather together. It's interesting, in the autobiography of Rabbi Herzog's son, Yaakov Herzog, he starts his autobiography with the way his parents met, that his grandfather, his mother's father, Rabbi Hillman, was a major Talmud Chacham, and he was in the London Beis Din. And he wanted to have a meeting of all of the Rabbanim together from England and Ireland. They should gather together. It was a Shnas Batzar, so he wanted to be Mate Kitnias. So they all gathered together. At that time, Rabbi Herzog was a Bacher, and he was the chief rabbi of Dublin or something like that. So he came to the meeting also. So Rabbi Hillman asked his daughter Sarah to serve tea to all of the Rabbanim. So when she started to pour the tea for this young, good-looking Rabbi Herzog, it was love at first sight. They both loved each other, and that's how they met. They fell in love with each other then. And then he writes the way she was so, instead of pouring the tea into the cup, she was looking at him. So she missed and she poured the burning hot water on his leg. But there was love at first sight. So they gathered together. The Rabbonim always gathered together to be matna the kidneys. If you have chametz, if you have any, you said that's batel b'shishim. Chometz bit Pesach is b'mashu. If the chometz got mixed in on Pesach, then the Gemara has a chorma mid the Rabbanon that it's b'mashu. If the chometz got mixed in before Pesach, we pass can even on Erev Pesach, chometz is not b'mashu. Up until Balayla, up until Leil Pesach, when chometz is b'kareis, so then we have this chorma mid the Rabbanon that it's b'mashu. So strictly speaking, if chometz, if there's a chometz ingredient and it's lach balach, chametz ingredient in a food item and it's batel b'shishim, so strictly speaking, it's mutter to eat it on Pesach. However, if I go to the store and I buy it specially, or I have it and I'm going to sell it with the chametz, so this year, instead of selling with the chametz, I'm going to decide to eat it on Pesach. So there's a tshuva in the Torah's Chesed where he quotes a group of major achrayim. It's a minority opinion, but it's a group of significant poskim who are of the opinion that my decision to buy it, and if I have a kosher product and another product that's also kosher, but based on bittul berayv. So if I choose to buy the product that has chametz that's batel b'shishim, that choice of mine, or I decide to eat it on Pesach, I could have eaten all the other stuff. My choice to eat it on Pesach, that itself is a violation of emavat anisa lechatchila. So again, this is not the majority opinion. Majority hold that it's mutter. But it's because of that minority, that significant minority opinion that the Torah's Chesed quotes a significant poskim hold like that. So that's why we give hashgachas on products. There's a prominent rabbi here in America who has a website where he has a list of all of the products that don't have a hechsher on them. And he explains that all the treifas is bottle b'shishim, so you don't need any hashgachas on anything. Yeah, that's the majority opinion. But the whole idea of having a kashrus organization is to be machmer for that opinion. Look, if you get stuck and you have no choice, if you have no other food to eat, so that would be ikra din, it's not a violation of eim avat anis l'chatchila, the decision to eat it. But but that's what we try to avoid all the time. Someone wanted to know, we can't invite any guests now, so does it make sense that we should say, kol dichen yesev yechu, kol ditzrech yesev yipsach? Yeah. Does it make sense? Kol ditzrech yesev yipsach. Whoever wants should please participate in my Korban Pesach. We don't have any Korban Pesach today. And when we say kol dichen yesev yechu, we don't open up the door. We open the door after the Bichas HaMozen is over. When we say Shvach HaMoscha. But we don't open the door. So this is all a zecher to what life used to be like in the days of the Beis HaMikdash. They used to invite each other. So I think even this year we should also say, Kol Dichen Yesev Yechol, Kol Ditzrach Yesev Yisach. I think we should still say it. This is an interesting, a very important question. Do doctors have an obligation to treat patients running a risk that they can lose their own life? This is a big question. If a patient in Shulchan Aruch, there's a big discussion at the end of Choshen Mishpat. If a person's life is bevadai sakana and another person is healthy, is he permitted or prohibited or obligated to put his life into a safik sakana to save the other person from a vadai sakana? So Rabbi Yosef Karo in the Beis Yosef quotes a passage from the Yerushalmi that one is obligated to. I think the Beis Yosef quotes it from Hagos Maimini, that the Talmud Yerushalmi says one is obligated to put his life into a Sufik Sakana to save someone else from a Vadai Sakana. Rav Soloveitchik used to say that his grandfather Rav Chaim passed like that. There was a cholera epidemic. There used to be every so often cholera epidemics in Europe. So there was an epidemic in Europe, and Rav Chaim said that all the healthy people are obligated to help treat the patients, even though they ran a risk. They were putting their lives in danger, and some of the people, Taka, did die. Rav Chaim himself also helped out the people who were suffering from the cholera, because he felt halacha like that, that one is obligated to put his life into Safik Sakana. They save someone else from a Badai Sakana. Others say that it's not obligatory. The reverse, it's prohibited. You're not permitted to put yourself into a Safik Sakana, even though it's a Pikuach Nefesh for the other person. Others hold just the opposite. It's not permissible. And others hold that it's permissible, but you can't say that it's obligatory. It's very, many Acharonim say that we don't really have such a Yerushalmi. It's very difficult to paskin like that a doctor is mechuyev to put his life into Safik Sakana, to save someone from a Vadai Sakana. I think the doctors take an oath, if they still do. I don't know, they take an oath that they're going to take care of all the patients. I don't know, did the oath include that they're going to put their lives into Safik Sakana? That's hard to paskin like that. If, let's say, one person is put on a respirator and you see that you're not getting anywhere and he's really a goises, he's holding by the end and the respirator isn't really going to help. So is it permissible to take him off of the respirator, to give the respirator to someone else who stands a better chance of pulling through, a younger, healthier person who stands a better chance of pulling through and of living much longer? You'll gain more years of life if you'll take this patient off the respirator and give it to someone else. So the din is that that's not permissible. If one kills a goyses, that's called a goyses b'dei shamayim. There's a goyses b'dei adam. If somebody shot someone else and he's in the throes of death, that's called goyses b'dei adam. Goyses b'dei shamayim. And it's going to cause him to die. So if one is a goyses b'dei shamayim and someone else kills him, yechayev misa, the Gemara says. And the Gemara says that it's not permissible to take one off of the respirator, even though he's a goyses, even though his chance of survival is very slim. And even if he does survive, he's not going to have that many more years. He's already 95 years old. And you want to save the life of a younger person. The din is the pikuach nefesh is derech kol tarakula, except for the gimel averos hachamura. This is considered ritzicha. And the Gemara has, the Yerushalmi and Trumas, has a case that's quoted in Shulchan Aruch and Yerideus, and Mekuf Nun Zayin, the siman about pikuach nefesh, is derech kol tarakula, and when do you say yehorag v'yavar? So the city was under siege, and a bunch of gangsters, murderers, put the city under siege. And they tell the people in the city, "Tnu lanu achas mikem, give us one person, and we're going to kill him. Vim lav, if you don't give us one person, we're going to kill everybody in the city." So the common sense dictates that you should give over one person, especially if they designated one person. Give over one person and save everybody else's life. At the end of the day, you'll save so many more lives. If you don't give over one person, then they're going to kill everybody, that person included. So the din is not so. You don't go bust the common sense. The halacha says, "Ein dech nefesh metay nefesh." That's what it says in the Mishnah. Pikuach nefesh is dech from the 613 mitzvahs. Pikuach nefesh is dech everything except for the gimel averos hachamuras. One of them is murder. So to take one person off of the respirator, that's considered murder. If by taking him off of the respirator, he won't be able to, after an hour or two, he won't be able to breathe, then you killed him. Then you killed him. We don't always extend life. We don't always, somebody asked this question of this disciple who was a Chazon Ish, his brother-in-law, what's the din? Do you always extend life? So he writes in response to the question, when we were young children, that's what they taught us in school, that the Jewish position is you always extend life. Then he says, when we got a little older and we learned Gemara Nidorim and we saw the Ran on Daf Mem, and we came to the realization that it's not always the case. And then when we learned Yeridea, we got even older and we learned Shulchan Aruch Yeridea, the end of Yeridea, they have all the dinim of Hilchas Refuah, when a doctor treats the patient and so on. So it says sometimes he even permitted to hasten the death of a patient. And the example is the Gemara of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, that he was deathly sick and he was suffering at the end, and he would have died from his sickness, but there was a blacksmith who kept on banging and making noise, so he kept on perking up, he kept on waking up, and his life was extended, and he was suffering pain. So Amsa de Bei Rebbe, the Jewish maid who took care of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, sent the message to the blacksmith, he should please stop making noise. And he stopped making noise, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi died in peace. So you see, and the Gemara doesn't condemn her, so it would appear that that's the accepted halacha. The Gemara tells us the story. The story appears at the end of Ksubas, the end of Yerideya, before the Hilchus Avelis. They talk about the doctors treating the patients. So Rabbi Moshe Feinstein explains, you're not allowed to hasten the death of a patient. We don't permit euthanasia, mercy killing. We assume, based on the pasuk, Miad Ish Ochiv, the Ksav HaKabbalah, who is a Talmud of Rabbi Kivege, he writes this in his commentary on Chumash, the Sefer Ksav HaKabbalah. The pasuk in the end, the Parshas Noach says that Hashem will punish one who kills his brother, Miad Ish Ochiv. A brother usually means with brotherly love. So why is a brother killing it? The busting means to imply that even if you want to kill a person out of rahmanis, out of euthanasia, active euthanasia, but if it's passive euthanasia, let's say a person is deathly sick and he's suffering. So don't put him, don't extend his life if it doesn't make sense. Don't extend his life, so he'll die earlier. And even if the person's life is being extended because the blacksmith is making noise, you're permitted to send a message and tell the blacksmith to stop making noise, and the melee, the patient will die. So Rav Moshe Feinstein explains that people don't die because it's quiet. People die because they have a sickness. The noise kept on perking him up, but then when they stopped making noise, then the melee, he died not because of the quiet. He died because he had a sickness, and the sickness killed him. So if you pull the plug on a patient, that's murder. If you take them off a respirator, that's murder. That's not passive euthanasia. That's active euthanasia that we don't permit. And the Yerushalmi gave the case that even if common sense dictates that at the end of the day you will save more lives, Ramitzicha, we're giving over the person to the gangsters, to the murderers, and they're going to kill him. You're not permitted to do that either. You're not permitted to do Ramitzicha. Let's say the relatives of the patient, the Gosses, is on the respirator, will give permission to the doctors to take them off of the respirator and give the respirator to someone else who stands a better chance of surviving. So you're not allowed to do that. To give the permission is Gramitzicha. Gramitzicha is not allowed even to save the life of someone else. That's one of the exceptions, even Makam Pikuach Nefesh. Yeah, how do we decide? There's a Mishnah in the end of Masechus Arius. If a few people are drowning and you can only swim in, you can only succeed in saving the life of one person, cannot save the life of more than one person. So whom do you decide to, whose life do you decide to save? So the Mishnah says that save the life of the person who is more needed by the community. So the community needs the Talmid HaChachamim, they need doctors, they need they need people who can help them out. They need Kohen Kodem Lelevi and so on. So you have this. So if a patient comes in and he has, a patient comes into the hospital and he has a very slim chance of survival, and we only have one or two respirators and we're going to give it to him, we know that another patient is going to come in later. Every hour, every 2 hours, another patient comes in. I don't think it's right to put the first one on the respirator in the first place. If you know you're going to need it for someone else later, so you save it for the one, you save it for the one where it will be more helpful, where it'll be more significant. Someone wanted to know, what are my thoughts about this outbreak? The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says that there are certain seven puranias that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings on the world because of the sins of the community. So the Mishnah says, based on Pesukim and Tanakh, Mishnah says that when people are, look, there are people all over the world who are atheists. Many nations are worshipping Avodah Zarah. Many people are worshipping Avodah Zarah. There are wars all over the world. There are murders all over the world. There are abortions, also form of murder, all over the world. People are violating Avodah Zarah. Shvichas Damim, Gili Arayis is very common, all forms, many forms of Gili Arayis. So the Mishnah says that when you have Avodah Zarah, Gili Arayis, and Shvichas Damim, these are the three major Averis. The Rabbanu Shlom will bring a big punishment to the whole world. It doesn't necessarily mean that every single person who dies in the Magefa is because he or she violated one of these three Averis. But the Mishnah says when the Rabbanu Shlom gets angry at the world, this is such widespread violation of the mitzvah of Torah. So then you have these kind of punishments that many people suffer. The whole community suffers. The Jewish people are supposed to be the Or LaGoyim. We're supposed to, the Rabbi Yeshaya tells us, and we have Pesukim and Chumash like that, the Jewish people are supposed to be like B'nei Bechori Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that the Jewish people are like the firstborn child. Firstborn child usually helps the parents raise the younger children. So it's understood the B'nai Yisrael is supposed to be Or LaGoyim to help raise the nations of the world. We're supposed to show them how to be careful about Avodah Zarah and Gili Arayis and Shvichas Damim. And we're not doing such a good job. The whole world is involved in all of these serious averis. And the Jewish people are not exactly living up to their responsibilities of serving as an Or LaGoyim in these three areas. We have to pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he should have rachmanis on all of us, on all of mankind. We all need a Geula, we all need a Yeshua. Maybe other people would like to bring up other issues. These are the only questions that they submitted to me. Someone wanted to, one of the questions that they asked was, we're all staying apart from each other, keeping a distance from each other. So how do we go to the rabbi's home to ask the rabbi to serve as our shaliach to sell the chametz for us? So one can appoint the rabbi without going to his home. You can send an email or call him on the telephone and appoint him as a shliach. Better is, in addition to calling the rabbi on the telephone, if you can send the rabbi an email, and so the rabbi will be able to, usually the balabatim always sign the shtar harshua, and the rabbi gives it over to the nochri when he sells the chometz to the nochri. So rather than just call on a telephone, strictly speaking, call on telephone, the rabbi can make a list of all of the people who appointed him as a shliach and give it to the non-Jew, a list of the people with their addresses and so on, with their telephone numbers, okay? You can do that, but better is if the person emails the rabbi shtar harshot. The Rambam writes that there was a minig that when Shliach makes a kinyan suder, he gives a hanks that he should acquire the power of shlichus. He should be able to represent the balabas in selling the chametz to the nochri. If you do it by telephone, by email, how can you possibly fulfill that minig? So Rabbi Soloveitchik pointed out that the Rambam first writes that there's no need for a kinyan suder when you appoint someone as the shliach, and it accomplishes nothing. So the Chazon Ish and his brother-in-law, who wrote the Kehilas Yankev, the Stipler, they both had the practice that when they would appoint a rabbi as a shliach, the selachom is they wouldn't do the kinyan suder. They wouldn't do the kinyan chalipin because they thought that it was a minig shtus, because the Rambam says that it's not necessary and it accomplishes nothing. So that's a minig shtus. Rabbi Soloveitchik thought that it's not true. The Rambam first says you accomplish nothing, but then he explains why it is that you do it. So he gave a long explanation, explaining a lot of other dinim also about kinyan suder, and he explained that the Rambam says this. The whole purpose of the kinyan chalipin is to demonstrate that you're doing this b'leib sholem, that you're doing it with a full heart, that you're appointing the rabbi as a shliach. So the Rambam says that if the person makes an oral declaration, I appoint the rabbi as a shliach, and I do it with a full awareness and understanding of what I'm doing and with all seriousness, and it's not intended as a joke. So then he's even fulfilled the minig of doing the kinyan chalipin. So Rabbi Soloveitchik said that every rabbi knows that on Erev Pesach, as he's about in the morning, Erev Pesach in the morning, as the rabbi is about to go to sell the chametz to the nochrim, one balabas will always call up on the phone and say, he forgot to appoint the rabbi as a shlich, what should he do? So the rabbi can write his name down, that so-and-so at such an address they asked me to serve as a shliach, and then to fulfill the minig of making the kinyan, Rabbi Soloveitchik said these two suggestions. Either the balabas should say, b'leib shalom gamartavi, I'm saying it with full awareness and consciousness of what I'm doing. So if there's another person there who can make, Rabbi Soloveitchik was talking, if a person went to work, b'shanim kitikunam, person went to work, and Jewish person went to work, and there's another Jewish person there in the office, so let the other person give a handkerchief to the balabas who wants me to be his shliach, and that'll work. Midin Abed Kanaini. That's what we do all the time by the chosin's tish. The chosin is obligated to give ksuba to his wife if anybody divorces his wife or he dies. So that's a takan, the ikir ksuba. Even though the husband never gave her a ksuba, even though they never made any hischaibis, that's a takonis chacham. That's in the Mishnais. That's called the Tanai Bezen. Hefke Bezen. Hefke Bezen made a takon. We say Bezen because most of the Rishonim Paskin, that's accepted opinion that ksuba is lav deraisa. There was an opinion in the days of the Tanaim, and there was a very minority opinion in the days of the Rishonim that ksuba is deraisa, but that's not the generally accepted opinion. His own ksuba is lav deraisa, but the Tosefis ksuba is way more than the ksuba. The Tosefis ksuba is $100,000. So the Tosefis ksuba is only if the chosin agreed and he made a couple of kinyan. So the kala is really the one who stands to gain. So she should come in to the chosin station. She should give her handkerchief to the chosin, because whenever you make a kinyan, is the kaina. So she should really come in to the chosin's tish, give her handkerchief, and make the kabbalah's kinyan regarding the tosefes ksuba and the assessment of the nedunya, how much she's bringing into the marriage. Our practice is we don't do that. Either the rabbi makes the Kabbalah's Kenyan, Masada Kedushin, or one of the witnesses makes the Kabbalah's Kenyan. So Tosfos points out in Kedushin, that was always the practice, even in the days of the Gemara, because the Gemara quotes the text of the normal shtar, all the shtars end off, the Kanina Mene, we the undersigned, may the Kenyan with the other party, with a kli that's acceptable for the purpose of Kenyan Chalita. So obviously in the days of the Gemara also, the Malva didn't give a handkerchief to the Loivet to become a Shibudim, to become a Shibin Chosim. The Edom used to give the handkerchief. How is that good? But you need Bekelev Shalkoine. So Tosfos says that's good, Medina Abit Kanaini. So the Medina Abit Kanaini means like this, the Pasuk says in Chumash, if one has an Abit Kanaini, you can free him either with Shtar or with Kesef. He gave a Shtar Shechur to the Abit Kanaini, he goes free. Or the end and the ordinary to sell. So this is a roof. The client doesn't have any assets. So how does he have money to give the Odon? So one opinion in the Tanoim is the Ebitaka doesn't have any assets. But if in order to free the Ebit, that's also good. Even though normally the one who wants to buy the field has to give the cash. But if the third party pays for the field that I should acquire ownership, is also good. A good Samaritan comes and gives the money to the owner of the field that he should be marked in the field to me. So that's a Kenya King ring. Kiddush and Medina. It says that that's the same by Kenya and Chalipin. It's not really absolutely necessary that the Kaina should give Caleb Shalkaina. If someone else gives on behalf of by the Kala doesn't make the Kenyan Suda by giving her handkerchief. The rabbi gives a handkerchief to the Chassan representing the Kala. The same over here. If there's another Jewish person in the office where this balabos happens to be on our Pesach in the morning, so you fulfill the minig of making a Kenyan Chalip. But the old Kenyan Chalipin is many centuries already, that when we sell a chametz to the nachar, we make six Kenyanim. Because each Kenyan is questionable, whether there's an opinion that the kesev, the ma'us is no good, and the Chalipin is no good. So we, lemaisa, we make six different Kenyanim. So some of those kinyanim have to be done in person with the nochri. So the rabbi has no choice. On Erev Pesach, when he's going to be selling the chametz to the nochri, he has to meet up with the nochri and make the kinyanim. But when a person appoints the rabbi as the shliach, it's not really necessary. He should meet the rabbi in person. He can appoint the rabbi by email and talk to him on the telephone and explain that he wants him to serve as a shliach. Everyone should be healthy, everyone should be well, and we should all celebrate Pesach. We should all survive this Eis Tzara.
You have been listening to a presentation of BensTorah.com.